Well, I think recent events, specifically his the manner in which he handled Vladimir Putin and the words that came from his mouth, you know, ultimately in that joint press conference, are very concerning. I think so concerning. We saw him walk it back almost immediately thereafter. I think we've all come to understand that the office of the president comes with it a deep responsibility, and that words matter. I mean, words matter in all of our positions, yours on the radio, mine in public office. When the president speaks, the world listens. And I thought he handled Putin totally inappropriately. He didn't recognize the history and the evidence of what a ruthless dictator, you know, Putin is, and where his self-interest lies. And I think we need President Trump to be more aware of that, more in tune to the very capable advisors that I think are in our federal government. In this instance, intelligence advisors, you know, clearly gave President Trump information that he, seemed to dismiss. And I think he recognized immediately the mistake that was made there.
With his stance on trade, which is not a traditional Republican stance, and indeed not a mainstream Democrat stance anymore, with his remarks on foreign policy recently, is he becoming a liability to the base Republican Party?
Well, you know, Trump as a candidate and as a bit of a standard bearer, has some pluses and minuses. You saw that in his own election, where the country was deeply divided, some with, you know, just an enthusiasm of support that seemed to be unprecedented. And in the same manner, on the other side, opposition that seemed, just as motivated. I think those same supporters who delivered the Trump, administration, the Trump presidency or victory, those same supporters have existed and still exist in the Republican Party. I look at the Obama administration as one which veered our country to the left. In doing so, I think the Obama administration angered a lot of Republicans who then were motivated to, as politics does, swing the pendulum in a significant way in the other direction. So I think that's what you saw. Now we move into, in Illinois, we're moving into our own November elections where Trump's not on the ballot, yet every candidate, even down to a local level, is trying to hang the Trump presidency and the Trump administration around the necks of Republican candidates up and down the ballot. You see it with Governor Rauner. You see it, again, all the way to local candidates. I suppose it's not much different than Republicans who are trying to hang Mike Madigan around the necks of Democrats, Pritzker on down. So, you know, this is, I suppose, the business of politics these days. For myself, I've always said we need to, try to paint an optimistic picture of our vision as public office holders and as candidates. Paint a positive and optimistic picture of where we want to take, in my instance, the state. I think that message has, I think there's an audience for that message that's not, that very much wants to hear from candidates, not on identity politics, not on, negatives about the other person, but on what positive things individuals want to do for our state.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. With us is State Senator Jason Barrickman. The governor recently signed one of your bills, Senate Bill 5440 to try to address some of the grant funding procedures that you have seen errors in. What do you think that's going to do for the state?
Well, that legislation took years to put together. It was the result of a program initiated under the Quinn administration called the Neighborhood Recovery Initiative, NRI. We audited that program. The legislature audited that program and found that the Quinn administration created this program seemingly overnight in the wake of the, I think it was the 2010 or 2014 elections where Quinn beat our local Bill Brady for governor. This program, which had not existed, came into fruition under the Quinn administration. The Governor Quinn shoveled tens of millions of dollars into the program. It was distributed under the guise of combating violence in the streets of Chicago, when in fact what we saw was that it was distributed in huge amounts of money to political leaders in the Chicago communities, some of the most violent pockets of the city of Chicago didn't even receive money. It was all seemed to be driven by political decisions made in the Quinn administration.
So how does this create a better process?
So what we did is eliminate the ability for a governor to siphon away or squirrel away money in state funds which have no oversight and accountability by the General Assembly.
Any governor, regardless of
that's
party.
That's right.
So what happens then with a grant program that presumably has better guidelines on distribution and is more targeted then?
So, you know, and we try to be careful with the legislation that I advance not to break the good programs that are out there receiving grant dollars and delivering services that are needed around the state. We worked with our human service providers. We worked with those in higher ed and others who receive lots of dollars in state and federal grants, and we carefully crafted the legislation not to inhibit what they're doing.
Why is it, considering that it was specifically tied to that governor and that program as a make good or a corrective, why did it get Democrat votes? Is it that Quinn is enough in the rearview mirror to allow a what could be considered a routine piece of legislation to escape political considerations, or just what?
You know, who knows? I'll let you call a Democrat in here to say why they supported it, but I think the reality
was... Well, you had to be in negotiation about the bill and about the considerations.
I think the bill on the face of it is good public policy. The audit was evidence of something that was broken. And I sit on the audit commission. I'm the co-chairman of the audit commission. We are tasked with reviewing the performance of state government, state agencies, identifying lapses, and potentially changing state law to address those lapses. This NRI program was just such a very significant abuse of power that I think even Democrats, who maybe were initially slow to come to the table, you know, when this program was first audited, I think now it's been several years later, the smoke's kind of cleared on the Quinn administration, we've all moved on, he's out of office, and people looked at this legislative proposal objectively and they said, absolutely, there is a clear separation of powers that exists between the legislature and the executive branch. The executive branch is charged with spending money, but only with the oversight of the General Assembly. And the fact that the law allowed a single actor, the governor, to spend money in this manner, which lacked accountability and, you know, lacked, you know, some of the safeguards that we would normally expect, it spent, that program spent over $50 million in a matter of weeks, for which we all look at today and say we didn't get anything out of it. So people view that as overly political. I think legislators on both sides of the aisle said this is a situation that needs to be fixed. And, you know, we We put legislation forward that I think does just that, regardless of whether you're a Democrat or a Republican.
Another aspect of summer bill signing season is House Bill 5627 to alleviate the teacher shortage. What fingerprints did you have on the Senate side of that?
So, you know, over the last year or two, we started hearing from especially our school administrators, your superintendents, principals, those who make hiring decisions at schools, that recognized or acknowledged that there is a difficulty in attracting teachers to some of our schools. I think this is very significant in some of our rural communities. It's very significant with some of our, specialties, whether it's, a teacher that focuses on math and science or special ed. So there's this challenge out there. We assembled, over the last year, a number of stakeholders and tried to solicit from the public their ideas on how we attempt to remedy this or at least help. And I think the legislation we put forward certainly helps. It reduces some of the burdens that one must go through to become certified as a teacher, the idea being that you might open up the market a little bit more, so there'd be more who are licensed and available to teach. I will say that I think we've got a long ways to go on this, and some of it is directly controlled by the laws that are in place. I think there's more that we can do there that will result in not dumbing down the standards, but allowing for a more robust and larger universe of people who want to become teachers in Illinois. There's another side of this that is, I think, merely political. You know, our teachers in our state have had a bit of a bullseye on their back for years. You've had people campaigning for office and criticizing those in the field, criticizing some of the benefits that are available to our teachers, and that has had a negative toll on the market of people who want to go into teaching in Illinois. And it's very unfortunate because I've yet to find a teacher who is responsible for the governmental decisions that have been made.
State Senator Jason Berrickman, thanks so much for joining us.
Always nice to visit with you, Charlie.